and welcome to Riser and Shine, an unofficial Star Trek podcast about the 2001 to 2005 series Enterprise. I'm your host, Jason, and joining me on the bridge is my number one, Michaela.
Hello.
Now, we don't consider ourselves to be Trekkie purists at all, but we are Star Trek fans, and we recently watched The Next Generation, DS9, and plan to revisit Voyager in the near future. However, no matter how many times we've tried, we've never managed to make it past, what, episode 3 of Enterprise. So, to erase this blemish from our Starfleet record, we created Riser and Shine, where each week, Michaela and I will discuss, review, and rate every episode of the series until we complete its entire 4-season run. If you'd like to know a little bit more about our history and with the franchise, we invite you to go back and check out episode 0. Otherwise, take your stations, and let's get into our discussion of the double pilot episode of Star Trek Enterprise, Broken Bow. All right, so I'm going to read through the plot breakdown from the database at StarTrek.com, and then we'll discuss any interesting points and details as we go. All right?
Yeah.
This is all new to us, and this format might change. So yeah, just bear with us as we try to figure out what it is that we're doing. Okay, so in the 9 decades following Zefran Cochrane's visionary warp flight in space and the first contact that followed, the human race has been slowly guided by the Vulcans towards developing the Warp 5 engine. Mankind is at last able to explore the virgin depths of space with a revolutionary new starship, the Enterprise NX-01, under the command of Captain Jonathan Archer. Plans to launch Enterprise are moved up when a Klingon courier is shot down by unknown assailants and crash lands in Broken Bow, Oklahoma. Feeling that the Vulcans have been condescending toward mankind for years, Archer insists it's the human's responsibility to return the injured Klingon to his homeworld alive. Archer is fully backed by Starfleet Command, and the Vulcans' objections fall upon deaf ears. So this is just a breakdown of the opening teaser, I'd say, the opening cold open of the show. And I have to say, it's one of the better pilots that I've seen from Star Trek. You can kind of tell straight away there's a bit of a budget there. After it kind of opens with the young Jonathan Archer with his father, and they're talking about the development of the spaceship and the Vulcans holding them back from developing the warp engine technology. We immediately cut into this action-packed scene with the Klingon who's running through the cornfields and is being chased by two new alien species, I think, to the Star Trek canon, as far as we're aware. And it's a pretty big explosive scene. What did you think of it? I thought it was quite interesting. I thought the pacing was pretty good.
Yeah, it was. There's definitely action there. And it kind of reminded me, it had the flavor of that, what's that sci-fi movie with Mel Gibson?
Oh, Signs.
Signs.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had a flavor of that.
It definitely had a very cinematic kind of feel to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was definitely, you can see that they had some money to spend. And what I liked about it as well is that it's pretty much a silent sort of opening once that bit happens. You're kind of just watching the action unfold. So it's very sort of cinematic and very story driven. And what's interesting about those new aliens, what I found was cool was when the Klingon, who's called Klang, which we'll find out later, he kind of runs into a barn or some sort of silo.
Yeah,
and he shuts the door. And the alien species, they kind of run up to it and they kind of break their body down and kind of become all mushy and liquefied, much like Odo or the Founders in Deep Space Nine. And they kind of go under the door.
Shape-shifting.
And then Klang kind of trolls them because he immediately jumps out from the top of the silo, turns around and blows them all to Kingdom Come with his disruptor, which I thought was cool. And then the farmer who comes out with his plasma shotgun.
Yeah.
He's all kind of pissed off because I guess he was going to Whole Foods that day with his crop, of course. And it's all kind of blown and smoking. And they're obviously talking and they can't understand each other. And he kind of stands his ground and blows him away. It's quite an action-packed beginning. And I kind of like the way it makes you feel comfortable with a new series with a Klingon face straight away. So you immediately kind of, in these comfortable slippers and everything. Yeah. Like, okay, here we go. And then boom, they kind of yank you out of that familiar face. Yeah. Well, the first words of the series, of the episode, is young Jonathan Archer saying, "Where no man has gone before." And he's, so that's immediately you're at home, comfy, warm scene, nice pair of slippers, and you're yanked out of them immediately by this action-packed scene, and you're not quite sure what's going on. But yeah, I like the way that started. That was quite interesting. Okay, so so after that action-packed scene, that kind of takes us to the next part of the plot, where we're on a space dock, and Archer has 3 days to assemble his crew, consisting of the charming Southern engineer, Commander Charles Tripp Tucker III, the strong and wary tactical officer, Lieutenant Malcolm Reed, the eager helmsman who grew up in space, Ensign Travis Mayweather, the linguistically talented communications officer. Why are you laughing?
You know why I'm laughing.
Oh, yeah, the
Adele
disease, right?
Not disease.
John Travolta, yeah, you guys, yeah. People will know what we're probably talking about.
The linguistically talented.
Ensign Hoshi Sato. And for his chief medical officer, Archer recruits the unconventional alien Dr. Phlox. So for the ship's first mission, the Vulcans request that an advisor from their ranks be present, and they assign the highly intelligent but stubborn sub-commander T'Pol. So, yeah, this is the classic sort of plot structure, what they do in films, especially in heist movies, where you have your main character who's the head of what's going to go down, and then he goes and recruits the people that he needs to ensure that they can pull off the job. Yeah. So, so Archer goes around and he finds his crew, each one for the job, and each one has already, you can tell, the kind of personality and how they're going to play into the series going forward.
Yeah.
I thought that was classic. I mean, it is a new Star Trek, but it's also very familiar in some of the tropes that the plot plays out.
Yeah.
And maybe, I mean, it's early to say because we're just kind of watching it again, but maybe that was part of the problem with the whole series, that it was trying to give you something new and fresh, but it was still holding on to certain classical Star Trek things.
But isn't that what people always complain? That when, because isn't that the kind of objections that that stories like Discovery and Picard have received, that when they do try different things, people don't like it.
Yeah, right? I mean, that's classic fans. We all do that, right? It's like typical where you get comfortable with a certain way of things happening, and you say that you want new ideas,
but you don't,
because immediately when they do that, everyone pushes back on it, right? Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, but that's classic fandom. You can never seem to please people. You know, they want Star Trek, but they want their Star Trek. It's the one that they know.
Yeah, so really, you don't want anything new necessarily. But perhaps
deep down there is that comfort, right, of knowing these certain tropes, which is probably the reason why they hit these certain beats.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Star Trek, really, but just with a new coat of paint, right?
Mm.
It's
But maybe, I don't know, maybe what people want is, I don't know, new worlds or new races, I think.
And that is the whole point of Star Trek, right? It's to seek out
new
civilizations. So and when they do that, people don't seem to like it. But then people we like what we like, right? Like, we get introduced to... So basically, obviously, this is high fantasy, you know, sci-fi, so even the aliens that we're thinking of and all these different civilizations, they're primarily rooted in humanity and humanism. So there's always going to be that element of that within these different races and all that comes with humans and our contradictions and so on and so forth. So it's really hard to really separate or to create an alien race that is completely different and completely unusual to what we know and what we're comfortable with. It's always going to have that human element within it.
And I just wanted to ask, isn't Dr. Phlox also a race that we didn't encounter before?
Yeah, I can't remember. I need to...
It's a Denobulan.
Denobulan. Oh, he's got that. I love the Doctors in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Doctors always tell me a lot about that series from the Doctor. Right?
Yeah, definitely.
The Doctors will tell me a lot about what's gonna happen.
It's an undercover key.
Yeah, it is a key role because they do tend to tie episodes together and they become an anchor point in some way, whether they're going to be comic relief in some way or stand up for some moral Federation guideline that someone has forgotten in the bloodlust of war or whatever's happening. So they are a key role. So, but yeah, Dr. Phlox, I liked him straight off the bat in many ways. I thought he was good.
He's actually my, so far from the first episode, is my favorite character out of all of them.
So far? Yeah. Yeah. I'm not.
The other one I haven't seen, apart from Archer, I haven't really seen enough of their personality. Obviously, T'Pol's, because obviously she's a Vulcan, so, you know, you will never see a lot of personality because that's the nature of the...
Right? Yeah. There's always those episodes and scenes where they crack a little bit.
But then the other guy, the... What was he called? The Tucker? Yeah. Again, I'm sure he will become... He's got the face and the, and you know, the, to become something more later. But... Obviously, we haven't got enough, right? It's a bit like...
Phlox is interesting. I do actually like the Vulcan sort of luminaries. Saval, who's in the early scene where they're debating whether they should launch or and hold back the launch of the NX-01, played by Gary Graham, I think. He's a legend in sort of geek and TV culture. Mm-hmm. So I like him. And he kind of got that Vulcan look about him.
Yeah.
Like, even with the makeup, he just has that the nose and the eyes of a Vulcan.
Yeah.
So I like him. And I do like Vulcans in general as a species and characters in Star Trek.
Because you're a Vulcan.
But at the moment, the only one is really I've kind of warmed to in some way is Phlox. But I also, I'm interested in the Suliban as well. I thought
they were interesting,
especially when Phlox opens them up, and we're going to talk about it a bit later, but he kind of sees how they've been genetically sequenced, engineered in some way, modified. So they seem like they're going to be interesting. Let's carry on the next part of the plot. So Enterprise speeds along her way. The crew all learn more about each other and strong bonds begin to form. Under Dr. Phlox's care, the injured Klingon, who we now know is called Klang, regains consciousness and Hoshi tries to communicate with him. Suddenly, the ship experiences a power failure and unknown chameleon-like aliens invade and kidnap Klang from sickbay. Dr. Phlox examines a captured alien and discovers he's a Suliban who has been genetically altered. With the Klingon gone, T'Pol advises Archer to return the ship to Earth, but he adamantly refuses. Meanwhile, a Suliban named Silik interrogates Klang, trying to find out why he was on Rigel X meeting with a Suliban female named Sarin. So, I guess by this point, so we've already seen the Suliban, who we now know are the Suliban, chasing Klang the Klingon at the beginning. And we kind of get to see a little bit more about them and what they can do in this mini sort of action scene.
Yeah.
And I quite like the way it was shot, directed as well. James L. Conway, he really is, in the Star Trek universe of creativity, he's one of the better directors. He's directed some really good episodes and he's really good at doing sort of action sequences and intense scenes on a budget.
Right.
Star Trek's never had the biggest of budgets, but I think Enterprise, they did put some money into this. And I did like the scene where the sort of the, you know, the lights kind of go out across the station and it went red for a second. And there was just this shot of the Suliban just kind of walking down a corridor and crawling up off the ceiling.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool. I thought that was quite interesting. It had almost had a horror vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was quite good. And I think it set the tone of...
Like Profondo Rosso.
I think it set the tone of what the Suliban might sort of offer as adversaries and sort of bad guys coming up. I thought that was quite interesting. And then again, we get to see a little bit more of your Dr. Phlox as well.
Yeah.
As he begins to investigate who they are. And he discovers that they're genetically modified in some ways with a few enhancements. And we noticed that as well, that in Starfleet, there seems to be a bit of a, I guess, genetically modifying life forms in some way. Mm. They don't like that.
Yeah.
We find out in Deep Space Nine that Julian was genetically sequenced and he had a lot of beef with that. And I guess there was some situation where humans try to enhance themselves genetically and it caused an issue where they were worried that those genetically enhanced people were going to take over everything and change the way of life. And they did not like that. And
but
they always have a beef with that. Yeah. But it's interesting how everything else they don't have a issue with enhancing in some way.
I wonder though how reality is influencing, moral reality is influencing though this this kind of writing. Because if you think about it, this was written 20 years ago. Morality, even in terms of science and medical, has changed completely.
Right.
Not completely 360 degree, but it's changed a lot to the point that today we are expanding into 3D printing of organs. You know, so I think we are, as a human race, on a path to eventually enhance. You know, we were talking, right. There's so much going on, but I think 20 years ago, somehow this was 20 or even 25 or 30 years ago, was still, I feel like, a taboo, even to imagine that that's maybe in the future, that's what it would involve.
Right.
Right.
I wonder if it ties back to our sort of, I wonder if it ties back to some sort of theological dogma. Specifically to do with the Christian God,
you know,
the Abrahamic sort of God, where we have been created all unique and special in our own way. And the minute we involve any sort of manipulation in that, improvement in that, outside of a traditional medical sort of change, it's frowned upon.
Yeah.
So it's not like you were saying how, so for example, if we go back to the baseball, back into the 90s of MLB baseball and Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire, who were, you know, slugging all these amazing home runs. And it later was found out that, at least with Barry Bonds, there was the issue of the drug enhancement and that which enabled him to get these amazing home run records later on in his career. And there always seems to be this thing with humans where it's almost like it's cheating on one level, but it seems to be something that interferes with the natural way of things, or at least to those who believe in a higher power, that it's colouring outside the lines of what it's already been given to us.
Yeah.
Right? And I always found that interesting in Star Trek, where I'm assuming that's something that they've thought about and that's been written into the plot and the thinking of humans.
Mm. When the kind Star of Trek cater is for both sides of, we look forward to the sort of scientific development and evolution of science and everything that it can give us. But at the same time, we keep also happy the crowd that perhaps, you know.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of
trying to balance it, I feel, with this line. Because it is, like, you're right, it is a repeating point that comes on different series.
Yeah.
It's not just brought up once in one episode.
Yeah. It is definitely something that Star Trek does seem to bring up. And what's interesting is as well that whenever they meet a formidable enemy in some way, that's a marquee enemy. So the Borg, for example, the Jem'Hadar, there is this sort of technological advancement or manipulation or sequencing in those enemies. And they tend to highlight that. And almost for this plot and the story wise, it's always interesting because it pits humanity at the pinnacle of what we can be without cheating, inverted commas, against an enemy, an adversary who has been manipulated or been changed or enhanced in some way to defeat or be better than those that it's met along its own journey. So, yeah, I do find that interesting. And maybe there's that pull and push and pull between some people on Starfleet and Earth who believe that this is the way that we should be heading, and others who are trying to hold on to those more early roots of humanity, progressing in other ways, food, no war, no famine, advances in genders and the way we treat each other and our exploration of space. But yeah, there's definitely I do find it interesting that there are these sort of remains or residues of the old us and our fight against change in many ways. Which is interesting, as Star Trek is all about that. So, you're right. There's definitely something that is threaded throughout the history of Star Trek. On to the next plot point of the story. So we're now at Rigel X, and the Enterprise away team discovers an amazing multitude of alien life at the training complex there. And I like that about Star Trek. Whenever they beam down to a planet, always feel, I always get excited about that because you never know what you're going to find.
Yeah,
it's always quite interesting. It's kind of like somewhere on Earth, but yeah, just that slight difference. I always like it when they beam down and when it's full of life and full of action and people going about their everyday sort of to-do list. I really like that. So that was really cool when they beam down. And so the team are basically trying to find out and locate information on Klang's visit and are constantly interrupted by strange new sights and sounds. Archer eventually meets Sarin, who tells him of a temporal Cold War in which the Suliban are being used to incite internal strife within the Klingon Empire. Klang was bringing back proof of this to his High Council in order to avoid the Empire being thrown into chaos. Hidden Suliban soldiers suddenly attack, forcing Archer, Sarin, and the rest of the away team to fight their way back to Enterprise. During the extremely intense firefight, Sarin is killed, and later Archer is rendered unconscious from a deep blast to his leg while saving T'Pol's life. So, classic Klingon in some kind of beef, in some kind of strife.
Yeah.
Some war is happening, someone's attacking, some subversive manipulation or chaos. It always tends to be with the Klingons. Always, always some sort of drama. And it's going to be quite interesting. So, yeah, how and why the Suliban are trying to cause this rift on the very volatile, already volatile Klingon High Council. Yeah. You never know if you're going to wake up the next day if you're a Klingon.
Well, I guess we'll find out.
We are going to find out. We haven't mentioned it here, but there is that sort of strange figure that one of the Suliban, I think his name is Silic, who keeps... He keeps going to talk to, and he's getting orders from this figure that we're not seeing, who I think the fans call Future Guy. Later on, they call him Future Guy.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, he's obviously pulling the strings, and we don't know who that is yet. I thought it was a Vulcan at first. I don't know. It sounded like a Vulcan. I'm not sure yet. Don't spoil it for us if it is. But, yeah, so we don't know who it is, but they're pulling the strings, and we don't know why yet.
Right.
But it does seem easy to antagonize Klingons. Yeah, they're pretty easy to antagonize.
That's an easy job.
Just poke their honor, poke their bravery.
Look them in the wrong way.
Don't show them any respect or, suggest that they're an inferior warrior race. Not just an inferior race, just inferior warriors, and you've pretty much got them figured out. Yeah. So, yeah, that was quite interesting to see how the Klingons are going to be involved with this Suliban and what sort of... advantages or issues that their genetics or the modified genetics are going to have later on at some point in the story. So Archer recovers. T'Pol takes command of Enterprise despite Tripp's objections and astonishes everyone by enabling the ship to track the Suliban vessel from Rigel X rather than ordering the ship back to Earth. After Archer resumes command, they arrive at a gas giant planet, apparently losing the Suliban's trail. But T'Pol is again surprisingly helpful when she works with Archer to determine that not one, but 14 Suliban vessels have recently entered the planet's atmosphere. Enterprise goes in to follow and discovers a huge Suliban mothership, or Helix, with 3,000 life signs on board. They are attacked by several individual Suliban cell ships, but manage to capture one with the ship's grappler. Archer and Tucker learn to fly the stolen craft and use it to infiltrate the Helix while Enterprise hides in a dense upper layer of the atmosphere and avoids the Suliban's depth charges. Archer and Tucker find Klang and release him while fending off Suliban with their new phase pistols. This was quite an interesting scene because it's reminding us that we're, 100 years set before the original series and... No tractor beam. There's a grappling hook, which I thought was really awesome. And it kind of shows you how far away we were because a grappling hook is something we would use now. And they were using it then. So no tractor beam. Phase pistols were introduced.
Yeah.
No real universal translator.
Nope.
It's basically got Hitoshi and some dodgy Google assistant that she's using.
Yeah.
The phase pistols. So, and of course, the when we mentioned earlier that or did we mention only yet? But the tractor beam is still not being... It's introduced, but it's very new technology and no one likes to use it, right? It's it's one of those things where it's unsafe.
Yeah.
No one's beta. Sure. Yeah, it's indefinitely beta 0.1 version. So, yeah, I quite like that. I quite like kind of seeing the genesis of these early technologies that we're so used to.
It's funny because when he gets... later on, when he gets transferred back to the Enterprise, Archer, he's proper like he's touching his chest and stuff, his arms. They say, am I still, am I whole here? Because obviously they don't know if you get transferred or not. Could be hit and miss, right?
Yeah, I do like that. I like the way that for longtime fans, yeah, it's kind of seeing the early versions of this technology that we're so used to. I wish they kind of went into those things a little bit more, just to kind of let us earn the sort of withdrawal that we've had, because this series launched pretty much after Voyager ended. I remember it was weeks after Voyager had ended. So maybe a lot of people say as well, this might have been one of the reasons why it didn't do so well, because there was just pure Star Trek fatigue. I mean, there was been Star Trek for all this time.
It's quite a long Voyager, right?
7 years. So even though this was a new series, people had just finished seven seasons of Voyager, and Enterprise launched, what, a few months after? Pretty much straight into it. So even though it's set as a prequel, which technically is Dot, Genesis, but in reality, we've had seven seasons of Star Trek. So I guess we had, and obviously all the series before, we really know about beaming, we know about phasers, and we know about replicators and what have you. So yes, we see them here in their earliest forms, but you kind of wanted maybe a little bit more of dealing with that and understanding their importance in another way. I wish maybe that it was written in another way, how we kind of get glimpses of how they're going to be important to Star Trek in later on in the pantheon of the series. But yeah, I wish there was a little bit more to do with that. Maybe there is in the series as we go along. We just started, but yeah, it was interesting to kind of see these early iterations of classic Star Trek paraphernalia. I remember you was mentioning something about the uniforms, how you weren't a big fan of the look.
Yeah, I didn't like, that's the one of the things that I, for me, is completely off. Besides, we haven't touched yet. I guess we're gonna touch at the end, is the soundtrack. But the other big thing for me that really irritates me is the uniforms.
All right, what it's do just, you like about
it? Just it's not Star Trek. They look like mechanics from Mr. Fix-It, you know, like down the road. they barely have this little rims of colors, you know, like red and orange and yellow that you will know.
It's definitely a shift away from the
traditional,
definitely from the original series, the very 60s colorful, and even Generation, Deep Space Nine. Voyager was a little bit darker in terms of the mood, but I felt Deep Space Nine and Next Generation, there was color. I mean, obviously in the uniforms, but just in the background of the lighting, it was definitely more warm, more reds and oranges, more yellows, purples in Deep Space Nine. But you can see there was a gradual shift going from Deep Space Nine to Voyager, and then really at the other end of the spectrum in Enterprise, it's a much grimmer, grayer, industrial-looking series, even the set design. Very submarine kind of feel to it.
And
you weren't feeling that.
No, I wasn't. And also the only one who does is not wearing this frumpy one-piece suit is T'Pol, who of course they had to they had to put us on something sexy and show off her figure and everything, which they tried to compensate.
I had no problem with that.
Oh, of course you didn't.
It's important to make sure your suit fits, of course, right? It's in space. It's
shut
very
up.
Important.
I just didn't like it because it's so obvious. Because, for example, the other lady, what's her name?
Oshii,
right?
Oshii Sato, the linguistic.
Sato, yes. So Sato, she's an equally beautiful woman, but there was no need for her to, because maybe she isn't as curvy as
T'Pol.
And I find stuff like that so irritating. But again, we're talking about 20 years ago. And it's funny because they try to compensate
Oh, and this scene.
No, they're trying to compensate by giving her a role of the Vulcan, so she's intelligent as she is beautiful. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It's a kind of, but because the physical for me is so distracting that it's not a compensation. It's not a match.
Right.
It's just like it's like trying to and failing in my point of view. I really don't like that. There was no need for it.
Well, yeah, there's a few times as well where Archer is in his short. I remember when he was getting his leg fixed from the blast, and he's in the triage of the medical with Dr. Phlox, and he's in his shorts and stuff. But that scene, that the ridiculous scene where Trip and Tucker and T'Pol are in the I guess the clean room where they're kind of been sanitizing each other down with the blue lighting. That was terrible. Yeah, that was a really forced, hey, we're sexy, we're kind of edgy kind of feel to it. That didn't work for me. I mean, I like the tension of it. I kind of like the fun of it because obviously it's clearly these two have been batting heads, but there's that obvious sexual tension between them, and we're not sure if that's gonna play out later on. We're gonna find out. But the way that it was, this wasn't a good look for James Earl Conway, the director. But yeah, the way that was done, I thought it was way too cheesy.
It was way too cheesy, and the thing is, it would have been fine if, for example, because you know you have to wash each other. That's fine. It happens.
It's a decontamination.
Yeah, exactly.
It's called.
So it happens, but. I'm sure there are lots of jobs in the world where you have to do some similar kind of job, and you don't go. Your colleagues at the end of the day, those two people are two colleagues. Even I don't know. Even maybe they should have given some hint somehow that maybe they were fancying each other. Then I would have understood that kind of sensual movement, but. There's nothing. This is like the first episode. I thought like it was just thrown there, and I don't know. I just really didn't like it.
A bit too much. I mean,
especially for Star Trek. That's the thing. Especially for Star Trek, it's a family show. That's not a family scene.
Not really, but I think they were hinting. So you know the classic story of Voyager, where Janeway, which is essentially they kind of given us a female version of of Picard in some ways. So even from the beginning, she didn't quite have her own agency. But I've always liked Janeway. I know she's not a popular captain with people. And it's mainly to do with silly things like her voice. But I didn't really have a problem with that. I really liked Janeway. But the fans didn't react to her so well because they did drop off. And then they admitted the producers of Seven of Nine's character was to bring in that sort of sexiness into the role, which I think really pissed off... Janeway, I can't remember her name, the plays of Catherine.
Yeah.
Catherine Janeway is her real name, but she was never comfortable with that because it really did take away from both characters in some ways. It kind of, and it was very obvious what they were doing there. But to be fair, 709 is a fantastic character. She turned out to be an amazing character. And Jerry Ryan, Kate Mulgrew, who's a brilliant actor, by the way. Jerry Ryan, a 709, was fantastic. And the two of them really were great together. I thought they had a great relationship in the end. And T'Pol in Enterprise is definitely a continuation of that, but from the get-go.
Yeah.
I think you're right. It's interesting that as a Vulcan, she decides to wear that type of clothing.
Because it's not even exactly
it's strange. Like Vulcan. Most of the time, Vulcans have that
tunic
kind of feel to them, and it's
they
wouldn't be so worried about accentuating their curves unless it's a ploy to rattle and have an advantage over humans. Because she probably knows as a Vulcan, she definitely knows what she's doing, and she probably sees it as a way to control and manipulate when needed. In her dealings with humans, especially males. So I'm assuming that's the reason why she's done that. Maybe that's something we'll explore later in the series. Mm-hmm. But it just seemed a little ostentatious that she would be dressing like that.
It's just OTT for my life.
She really does stand out amongst the rest of the crew.
And also, especially, like you said, just that,
comparing her to
Hitoshi. And on top of it, it's like the pout. She's constantly, I don't know if it's her lips naturally. I need to go and check in other pictures. But it really got on my nerves.
I think that's Jolene. Face. I think it's her name, Jolene Blaylock.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jolene Blaylock. I think that's her natural.
Oh my God.
Pout.
Yeah.
So, but I love Vulcans as the species. So fantastic. I'm just looking forward to seeing how much
we'll see.
Yeah, how much further.
I might change my view. You know, I might change my liking of the character later on.
Mm.
But the first impression, you know, she's very Vulcan in her ways, but it's just like how they dress her up and how they made her be that, for me, is not really appealing, that's all.
Okay. So, yeah, the final sort of act and last few sequences now. So Tucker takes the Klingon back to Enterprise. Archer stays behind to set off a magnetic disruptor that dismantles the helix. Archer discovers a temporal chamber used by the Sulaban, to obtain their orders from a mystery shrouded figure from the future. Archer is found by the Sulaban leader, Silic, and the two struggle against each other in a time-shifted environment. Archer manages to exit the chamber and is beamed back to the Enterprise. So that's what we were saying, the first time that he experienced being beamed and teleported, transported from one place to another. And that was quite funny when he lands on the dock, he was like, touching am I his here? Body and like, I love that. And that great, it reminds me of the great episode in Voyager, is it, when the Tuvix, where Tuvok and Neelix mix together.
Yeah.
Fantastic. It's a great episode. Leaving the Sulaban behind, Enterprise warps away and successfully delivers Klang to his homeworld. The Klingon Chancellor draws blood from Klang, and his scientists find hidden within his DNA the Sulaban data proving their conspiracy to undermine the Empire. So that was quite a cool scene. So we're on Kronos. Klang has gone back to his people, and they immediately cut him, Klingon style, like,
whoosh,
slice his hand. And,
but we don't know why.
We're not too sure. Well, right? So they cut his hand, they take his blood, and they put it into their microscopic computer, and then they find within the DNA some code or plan that was this conspiracy that was, they found out it's true. There is some conspiracy by the Sulaban to put the Empire at odds with each other.
Right.
So, but yeah, it doesn't go any further than that because he speaks in Klingon to Archer.
Yeah, we don't understand.
And we're not too sure what he says, but Archer just accepts it as a thank you, basically. So it's basically setting up a big thread plot point where the Sulaban are obviously up to something with this mystery figure.
Yeah.
And it seems like they want to be causing some beef and rivalry between Klingon House and the High Council. And whoever, I guess, is involved, assuming the humans and the Vulcans are possibly pawns in this in some way.
Yeah.
We don't know who this shrouded figure is. I think it's a Vulcan. Do you have any ideas who you think it could be? It's interesting, right? It could be a human as well. We're not sure.
I don't have any...
It's exciting though, because...
Anything at all, because we haven't been... It's such in a different time and space though, of the usual of Star Trek that we don't know who they've met. We only know they've got a very limited exposure to other races, right?
Yeah. So this is very much a first kind of episode. Yeah. First time the warp drive is going to be used on a starship class ship. First time we meet the Klingons. First time for phasers. First time for transport. First time for...
So it could totally be a completely like third party race. Like, for example, like you discover in DS9 that you have the, you know, the founders, they...
Yeah, the Dominion and...
Right?
Yeah.
They we didn't know about them.
I love Deep Space Nine.
So it could be something like this, that there is a third party race that it's overall trying to cause trouble. Or it could be some subversion, like you were saying, from the Vulcans.
Yeah, it could be.
I guess we just have to watch.
We were going
to,
yes, exactly. Resist. This is the reason why we're doing this.
Resist.
We're going to watch, continue watching and find out what this is all about. It's exciting. It's set up some interesting things. So, the Klingons find the data proving the conspiracy to undermine the Empire inside the blood of Klang. And then we end basically back on board the Enterprise. Archer receives orders from Starfleet that henceforth he and his crew are to officially begin their mission of exploration. Gratefully acknowledging her assistance in the mission success, Archer sets aside his pride and convinces T'Pol to remain on the ship as science officer. A course is laid in for the nearest inhabited planet, and the crew of Enterprise boldly warp towards the unknown.
At warp 4. Yeah. At a super fast
interesting, yeah. Warp, well, warp is limited here at the moment. But this is what I love. You know, it's interesting to kind of, we're going back, you know, to the early beginnings of Star Trek and the technology that we know. And it is kind of, it's interesting because it's mentioned, I remember there was that one scene where Trip and Archer and T'Pol are kind of talking in the ready room just before they, just as they're sort of marking their territory. And I think T'Pol makes some comment about humanity, and Trip tells her that, you know, in terms of war and famine and that kind of thing, we've sort of eradicated that within two generations. You know, I wouldn't call that small potatoes type thing. And it's interesting that we start the show Enterprise without any of that. So we're kind of seeing where Star Trek began, but we're not really kind of seeing how humans overcome all these things. That would have been a really interesting
series.
And we
still haven't, even in the...
We still don't really know, right? It's mentioned here and there, and they're always proud to say every time, every so often, how
we don't have
humans have overcome all these things. We're not interested in money and war, but we never really saw how we overcome that because, you know, look at today.
Yeah, exactly. Still, it would be so useful
still restrained by all these things, by capitalism and greed and vanity and money and war. Famine, it's still here. So it would have been interesting to see.
I guess we just have to invent replicators.
How did we
overcome this? Replicators are the future of humanity, people.
That would have been an interesting show. Maybe, again, we're going to be watching that this. It might be something that they kind of go into a bit more in the series as we watch. But it would have been, I've always felt it would be interesting to have a Star Trek series on Earth and just kind of describing how we did overcome all of these issues that we seem to have today, the things that hold us back from exploring and doing even more with our intelligence. Mm. And then, like you said, discovering space travel and star and galaxy travel and the warp that we're going to get into now. That would be really interesting. But it's not something that they've ever, apart from mentioning it in different episodes and through certain characters, it's not been the core theme of a series.
But it's interesting also, some little details that shows how sort of behind Enterprise is compared to the general universe of Star Trek is when Archer records his computer things, his computer thoughts.
Oh, he's logging
in. He's logging in with a current date on how, like, we use it. It says the year 2151.
Yeah, but I like that because, again, it's like the beginning of how.
Yeah.
Now we know how things are different a bit later on.
So that's only 130 years from now. That's when he said 130 years. That's nothing.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. Just those little differences and changes.
Would you think 130 years from now we manage to do that? To be. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, who knows what's going on in the labs around the world to this day. But then again, we still haven't solved the cold. Cold is still taking people out. So
exactly.
Who knows? But
if you looked at the propaganda in the 50s and the 60s, we were supposed to have flying cars by now. We don't, right?
Yeah.
So
maybe Tesla. That's what they're working on.
Yeah, but they should have been like the normal when it's not. And so I don't know, 130 years to me, that don't seem enough.
Well, I guess in our imagination as humans, that's one of the great things about us. Well, we think way ahead of our capabilities, right? Like our brain thinks much faster and deeper than what we can actually do. But yeah, it was an interesting episode. One of the better ones, I would say, compared to, say, The Emissary for DS9 or The Caregiver, the original. I thought it was okay, not bad at all. Definitely got a budget to it. Some good action scenes. I thought the action scenes were pretty good. And I'm interested in the Suliban. I hope we get to see them a little bit more and what they can do and what their whole plan is in regards to the Klingons. And now that humans and Vulcans are involved, how that's all going to turn out. So, I didn't think it was a bad episode. I think it's time we can rate it now. So on Riser and Shine, we have our own little rating system here. We rate things on a scale of 1 to 5 pips or ensign, lieutenant, commander, captain, and admiral, which would be the highest 5 out of 5 pips. So, Michaela, for episode 1, the double pilot episode Broken Bow of Enterprise, what would you rate it?
Overall?
Yeah. Come on, be...
I would say maybe 3.
3.
Being kind.
3 pips, a commander. I would give it the same as well. I'd give it a 3 pips. I think it was saved. I like the beginning of the episode with the action in the Oklahoma Broken Bow. I thought that was good. I like the first sort of attack on the ship with the horror sort of scene. Mm. And then the on Rigel X, the action scene there. There was a lot of action, I thought.
Mm.
And I thought it was done pretty well. Wasn't a big fan of the production design and the look of it all at the moment.
Yeah.
And I love Porthos, the dog. I think he's going to be... a fan, along with Dr. Phlox.
Yeah,
Phlox and Porthos are amazing.
Yeah, those are my favorite two.
They're the favorite things so far. Yeah, the
favorite things in this
episode. And I love that smile that Phlox did when he smiled at Archer when he was talking about, when he was giving the examination of Clang.
Yeah.
His face, that just massive grin. I love that. That was really good.
Yeah.
So 3 pips commander for you and the 3 pips commander for me.
Yeah. Which is unusual because we... don't normally agree.
Yeah, so that's our first time we've agreed on a rating. 3 pips, a commander for Broken Bow.
And a -5 for the soundtrack.
I'm not going to talk about the that. Yeah, yeah. We'll one day we'll do an episode. Cause,
why not?
Nah,
let's forget. Are you not ready for it?
I can't. I'm not ready.
I'm going to sing it though.
No, we're watching. I'm going to end it right now. That's our podcast for today, folks. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. If you like what you're hearing, then please join us for our next show. We'll be discussing Series 1, Episode 3 of Enterprise. I think that's called Fight or Flight. Should be a lot of fun. So until then, this is Riser and Shine, the unofficial Star Trek Enterprise podcast with Jason and...
Michaela.
Great. Thank you, guys. We'll see you soon. Helm, take us out of here. I think Warp 3 today?
Yeah.
Warp 3. Punch it.